And welcome again to another live edition of Midrats, except we're not live. This is pre-recorded. So for the usual suspects who enjoy coming to the chat room or who may want to dial in, we're not going to have that functionality this afternoon. But that's okay. We've got a great guest, and I think you're really going to enjoy our show. As we continue the trend that we've done in the last year and a half of our five-year run, where we've tried to bring some attention to the corner of the globe that it produces more history than be consumed locally, and though it may not always break above the fold on the news, it's incredibly critical to our future, our national security requirements with our allies, and it's always good to keep an idea of where things are developing in that area and what our friends, allies, and our compatriots in the U.S. military and diplomatic services are doing to those means. And our guest today to discuss this for the next 30 minutes is going to be Major General Wayne W. Grigsby, Jr. He is the Commanding General of Combined Joint Force Task Force, Horn of Africa. Major General Grigsby, welcome to Midrats.
Hey, no, thank you very much. It's my honor today to represent all of the teammates, civilian military leaders in the joint services, and to represent all my teammates within East Africa to talk to you today. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Yes, sir, we really appreciate it. Just as kind of a general scene setter for our listeners, most of them are familiar with the Horn of Africa, but the combined Joint Force Task Force Horn of Africa, it really encompasses a pretty nice geography, and it's really a great example of that comprehensive approach, working with local nationals, other countries, everybody that has an interest in the area. If you could please, just in broad terms for the listenership, kind of outline where your team is operating and what are some of the major countries that your people interact with.
Hey, no problem, sir. And again, thanks for having me here today. And as you know, as part of CJTF Horn of Africa, we live within East Africa and within the region of East Africa. And our headquarters just happens to be in a great country called Djibouti, in which we signed an agreement for 20 years that we're going to stay here. We have great teammates in here with our Djiboutian teammates. Matter of fact, we just had the foreign minister visit us yesterday. It's a great visit, and we learned a lot, because what I've learned here in East Africa, it's important to have two ears and one mouth. That's why the good Lord gave them to you. And we should listen more to our teammates here to understand their objectives, understand what they need, and we should just listen a little bit more, and we can assist them better. So we work out of Djibouti, but as you know, Djibouti is about 20 kilometers away from Yemen, across the Red Sea there. That's in CENTCOM's AOR. Djibouti's in AFRICOM's AOR. And then as you go down the coastline, of course, you have Ethiopia, you have Kenya, you have Burundi, you have Uganda, you have South Sudan, you have Tanzania, Eritrea is a little bit to our north, and then you have the country of Somalia and all these countries are all part of East Africa. And I kind of work for all of the ambassadors of each of these countries, because we just don't look at it from a Djiboutian standpoint or an Ugandan standpoint. We are really trying to work effectively from a regional view. Majority of our authorities and our policies, they come from the State Department, who I work for, because state is in charge here, DOD is not. But majority of that stuff is bilateral. So what we try to bring in perspective with our African Union teammates is to look at the problem here from a regional standpoint. And that's why I'm partners and working with, by and through, behind, beside, and below of all of our East African teammates within the region of East Africa. I hope that answers your question.
Well, it's a good answer. It raises a lot of questions, sir. What are the big when you take over a job, and you've been in this position about a year now?
Right.
What were the biggest learning curve issues for you as you got there? What lessons did you learn, and how have you applied those over the last year?
Well, that's huge. I mean, so we have this current doctrine thing in the United States Army, and I think General Dempsey is taking it up to the joint doctrine, something called mission command. And I tell you what, General Dempsey brought this into the Army, when I was the director of the Mission Command Center of Excellence, and then he's brought it to the joint community. And I tell you, the six principles is what I've learned again and what I focused on. The first thing I had to do to figure out is how to build relationships based on trust within the joint team I have here. Because as you know, I have the joint team here, all services and civilian leaders, all made up of in this headquarters. But then also I work within the interagency process. But what's different from my experiences in Kosovo, Iraq, Afghanistan, is that DOD's not in charge. Our state teammates are in charge. So I have to learn how to build relationships based on trust and understand their capabilities and their authorities. Because the ambassadors here are in charge of each one of these countries. So I have to spend a lot of time going out and building relationships with them. That's the interagency. Then you go to the I and the M of the gym, the intergovernmental multinational teammates. And then it's a spending a lot of time going out and introducing my family to all of the multinational teammates, the senior leaders, through pictures and photos of who I am. This is what I do. This is what I've been doing. This is my wife. These are my kids. You know, just getting to know each other and building this relationship based on trust. That takes a lot of energy and time. I have two C-12s, and I spent a lot of my time early on building those strong relationships that we could be based on trust, right? And then I had to articulate to everyone the mission statement and the commander's intent of CJTF Horn of Africa. So everybody understood that, not only within CJTF, but also how this mission and intent was going to assist the ambassadors and the country teams and each of their countries, then how it could impact the region. So that takes a lot of time. And then because I had relationships based on trust, I was able to build the team together as one. Just last week, we had the Theater Security Cooperation Activities Conference here in Djibouti. And 12 months ago, if I was smart enough to have a good vision statement, it would have been to have this conference here in a year where we have all of the ambassadors and the deputy chiefs of mission and the chargés from all the different countries, and then have all the teammates here to look out what we're going to do in FY15 and 16 from a regional approach to assist our teammates. And then once you get all that set, those kind of four steps set, then you can go out and execute discipline initiative. In other words, you can be out there in the environment trying to enable and assist, and I'll talk about mission statement in a second, but if you have that great context, you can go out there, and when the environment changes, if you understand and you have good trust and relationships and you have good teamwork, you can now maneuver a little bit quicker than our adversaries. And then because we always got too much stuff to do, it's really about where do I take risk? Because I can't do everything. And if you saw the headquarters here, the amount of people we have and what's expected of me, I have very little resources. So I really have to figure out where I can take risks. And I can't do that if I didn't do the first five steps of mission command. So that's not a relearn of a lesson learned. That's just confirming that we have a pretty good doctrine at the joint level and within the Army that allows us to go into an environment and very quickly build the team to allow us to move more effectively. Does that answer your question?
I think I fleshed it out real well. I like the way you described there. I think it's one of those perfect examples of the importance of having leaders in position for a fair bit of time.
Yes.
Because in our context, we might be used to people spending 6 months, 12 months, 18 months in a job and then going on to the next. But most of the world doesn't work like that.
That's right.
It's old school network building. A lot of these people, they come from a tribal background, which means it has to be a leader to leadership building and trust. And you just can't, you know, trade out people's and personalities and expect to pick up where the previous guy goes from there. We saw that in Afghanistan in spades. And I kind of wanted to pull the thread on that because it is such a complicated calculus for you to and your team to be able to do your job, because not only do you have the many nations in that area, but inside those nations, you have very distinct ethnic groups, different religious groups, and anybody who's been reading the news can see where those fault lines are that run through yours and your neighbors' areas of responsibility. But there's also in that area nations that, and some of them have representatives in your headquarters, that have very long-term relationships and interests in that area. We're talking about some of the former colonial powers of France, Britain, and even Germany back before World War I. And then we also have some newer powers who perhaps have more economic interest in the area, such as China. And different nations, not only do they bring different backgrounds and longstanding relationships with some of the local countries there, but they also can bring perhaps different skills to the challenge of building those relationships in East Africa. I wonder if you could touch for a minute about perhaps France, the United Kingdom, and maybe China, and some of their interests in what they're trying to accomplish in East Africa, that you know maybe their Venn diagrams overlap ours in some areas, but perhaps are there a few places that their interests are different, or their skill set maybe is a help to us?
So, no, that's a great question. So I have a myriad of liaison officers, foreign liaison officers, and teammates within the headquarters, as you know. And a lot of them, France, I have three United Kingdom that are staff officers on the CJTF Horn of Africa staff. Matter of fact, I'm going to London the first week of February to reinforce my second trip there. I have LNOs from France. I have LNOs from South Korea. I got LNOs from Uganda, Burundi. I mean, Japan, all the teammates. I don't have any representation from China within the headquarters, but from everybody else, I have that representation. And it goes back to the previous model that I talked to you about, gentlemen, is that yeah, they're very effective. I would tell you my J5 planner is a Brit, and he is so effective in conceptualizing and the intellectual capacity and understanding of looking at this from a regional approach, it's really helped us where we are in our life cycle. And of course, you know, the French were here a lot longer than we were when it comes to Djibouti. And I really have to learn from them on what's going along. And they have a good foothold in here in Djibouti as well. So we really just built the team, to be honest with you, with all of the different foreign liaisons officers from other countries. But also we have foreign liaison officers from the East African teammates here. Uganda, Burundi. We're going to try to get one from Kenya. We've got Djiboutian sitting in here. We've got Ethiopian. And what I've done there, and this is one of our accomplishments in the long run, is what I've done there is when I first got here, they were sitting in a room by themselves about a mile and a half from the jock, and we would talk to them once a week because we weren't sharing information appropriately. We were not willing to share everything. We would overclassify a lot of our information. And we weren't sharing information the way we could through the rules that we have to make them feel more like a team. So most recently, about a couple of months ago, we developed this unclassified environment because the majority of our mission is not classified, to be honest with you. The majority of our mission is building partnership capacity and enabling our regional actors to do things. So that can all flow on an unclassified environment. But what that's allowed me to do is now I have the foreign liaison office from all our countries. They're all sitting in there with intelligence, with operators, with civil affairs, and they form little teams, country teams, and they all sit around in the same room, no walls, no cubicles, and they constantly have their hands on the problem on how we can enable our regional actors to do what they need to do within East Africa. And it's pretty amazing because a lot of our great ideas, it goes back to my two ears and one mouth, a lot of the great ideas, and they should come from the East Africans. This is their neighborhood. We just happen to be renting a house here. It's costing a little bit of money, but we're not the experts here. The experts are the East Africans, and you have to listen to them and understand all their objectives and understand their perspectives. That allows you to move faster and based on trust. So it's really all back to mission command and building relations based on trust and building that team within the joint interagency intergovernmental multinational environment. That's the constant thing I do as the commanding general of CJTF Horn of Africa. Over.
Well, I wanted to talk about your staff a little bit. I know you just had a mission manning conference. Could you kind of talk about how that feeds into the work you guys are doing and the bodies you have and how this all melds together to create an organization that you can work to fulfill your mission?
No problem. And, you know, so I don't know if anybody told you, but I was told about a week ahead of time this time last year when I was about in December, said, hey, Grigsby, get your – you know, I was in the building, says, you're going to Djibouti. And I said, well, where is that at? You know, and then, so I got out here and very little prep, very little transition, got out here and took over and then quickly realized that, you know, I have a 300% turnover in a year and every 2 weeks I get a truckload of new leaders from all different services. All different services, reserve and guard. 53% of our staff is made up of reserves and guard. And you know what I say? Thank God. I wouldn't want to change that. Matter of fact, I want to increase it. Because why? So the problems that we have here are so complex. You know, I've been in the Army for 31 years. I'm a phys ed major and I'm an infantryman. So I'm pretty good at, you know, two up and one back solutions. You know, it's pretty easy. Put two companies up front, gain contact with the enemy, put one in the back, find a flank and get after it, right? Simple. But the problems we have here are complex, not easily understood. We live in a world of uncertainty. So the reservists and guards are phenomenal because they come in with their civilian skills, PhDs. You know how many lawyers I have on the staff that are doing it as the civilians? Bright individuals that have different experiences. And that's the kind of thinking you need in CJTF Horn of Africa. Because in CJTF Horn of Africa, you don't have all the authorities and you have very little resources, but you're expected to have the same results that I was supposed to have as Kosovo as a battalion commander, Iraq three times as a, you know, as a brigade commander, whatever I did, and then Jordan, and then now here. It's the same mission, but just limited resources. So having the reservists who have these different ways of looking at things, and they're a little bit older, which is good because you need patience here. You know, nothing's going to happen fast, and you've got to think your way through it and have a good plan to get there. And I we're very lucky, but, you know, 300% changeover. Every 2 weeks I get a new truckload of guys coming in, right? And, you know, so it is leader intensive of keeping everybody informed and keeping all moving towards our mission intent. Over.
Yes, sir. We had, that's a conversation we've had with a few people over the years, and that's the experience that I had in Kabul as well. Is it's you could kind of joke about you look to your left and your right and you are on the island of misfit toys, but you do have such a great diversity of experience and background, and sometimes you're really surprised that that major walking around next to you has an incredible asset, and you move them from seat A to seat B and say, I want to tap into that knowledge that you have back home. It really is a force multiplier that until you really see that in action. You can't appreciate it. And one of the things that I wanted to give you a chance to talk about is building relationships and building local leaders with the people in the host nations you visit. For instance, when you head right north from your headquarters, you go to Egypt, and President El-Sisi was General El-Sisi, and he has, you know, quite an extensive background in the U.S. working with the U.S. military. And you know, from a J-O on up, and we have quite a few people who know him on a personal basis. If you could talk for a little bit about how y'all interact with some of the civilian and military leaders, and how that history of building those relationships can pay dividends down the road in a larger national context.
Yeah. So you just hit on what I think the long-term plan is. So, you know, again, being here for about 13 months, you know, the tactical actions that we're using to accomplish our mission in East Africa, you know, in partnership with our Joint Interagency Intergovernmental Multinational Team, we conduct theater security cooperation activities to assist our regional actors to neutralize violent extremists. Neutralize is a fancy word for kill violent extremists, but we enable our regional actors to neutralize violent extremists. We enable our regional actors to allow for freedom of movement and access in order to protect the United States and interests of our teammates abroad. And then we conduct our new normal. So operations, crisis response. So that is, yeah, we have to do that. So the example I give is when I talk to sergeants and I talk to young leaders that are like going into Burundi to help them with training, sniper training, or going into Kenya to assist with counter IED training, or going into Uganda to assist with indirect fire training. That's all important. That allows us to get at our near-term tactical actions. But the long-term piece is just what you said. It's about building leaders. We say CJTF Horn of Africa is a leadership factory, and we build leaders first across East Africa. That's the long-term. We have to be doing that at the same time, and you can do that when you're doing your near-term mill-to-mill engagements. Because it's when a guy in a U.S. uniform shows up, he is Michael Jordan. Everybody wants to be like Mike because he is part of a profession of arms that's based on character and integrity. And he understands what it's like for a military to work under civilian control. So the way he carries himself, the discussions he has, all that stuff by your nonverbal communications is what rolls off. Next week, well, the week after next, this is my fifth time of going to the East African Center of Excellence. And I go and I'm a guest speaker at this course of about 40 East African majors, lieutenant colonels that are training to go out and be staff officers for the force headquarters in Somalia. Now, I go in there and talk to them about counterinsurgency and figure it out. But what I'm really doing is I'm talking to the next Chad of Wamala, of Uganda, 12 years from now. I'm talking to the next Chad of Djibouti 12 years from now. That's who I'm. That's my audience. When I had to go up and talk to the West Point of Djibouti at Arda, up at that school, and I told him, I said, look, guys, it's on you. You are the future leaders of Djibouti. Who is going to be the Chad of Djibouti in the future? Remember, you're part of a profession of arms. You're less than 1% of your country that's giving back. It's based on character and integrity. You have core values. So that's the way I do it. And then we've written a bunch of articles. We're going to do in April, I'm bringing all of the senior military leaders of all the countries to Nairobi, to the East African Center of Excellence, and we're going to talk about the profession of arms. And what do those words mean in East Africa, in an East African context, and how can we understand that so we can assist you more in developing these leaders over time? So it's really, I mean, you're hitting it both when you go in and assist the countries to get those tactical actions now, but also it's how you look, it's how you represent, it's what you talk about, it's how you present yourself as a U.S. soldier, sailor, airman, marine that builds those leaders, that leader development in the long run. I hope that answers your question. Over.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
As you look across the Red Sea, sort of to Yemen, is things in Yemen and in Somalia, do they help focus the attention of the people you're working with as far as fighting these violent extremists as part of your mission statement?
Great question. No, Yemen's not in. It's in the CENTCOM's AOR. But I'll take that, and I understand what's going on in Yemen and it has an impact because I'm only 20 kilometers away, and we talked about it with the foreign minister yesterday in Djibouti on the actual threat to there. But your point is, you're exactly correct, and that's how we use Somalia, to be honest with you, because we have very limited policy from the United States for me to do much of anything in Somalia. I'm talking my policy and authorities for CJTF Horn of Africa. I'm allowed to have 5 people in there that are part of a military coordination cell that are assisting, enabling, and coordinating events. However, because of what's going on in Somalia, because of the troop contributing countries that are all working together in Somalia under the Amazon headquarters, I kind of use that as the forcing function or the purpose to build this East African leaders to solve East African problems. And the same way that the way we operate in the United States military because of Iraq and Afghanistan, we've changed the way we've operated since 2003-2002, and we've become more effective, I think, within the joint interagency team. I kind of use that as the same way to build this regional approach, working through the African Union and the force headquarters in Somalia as the unifying purpose that brings it together. And we do lessons learned conferences. They go in and they try this. They come back out. They do after action reviews. They feed it back into their training. So it is a great laboratory, a leadership laboratory to allow us to learn things to make East Africa more capable to solve anything, whether it's violent extremists or instability or a hurricane or a pandemic, whatever it is, it's those guys working together, and Somalia happens to be the forcing mechanism. Over.
Yes, sir. Because you've been subjected to do Navy guys over the course of the last half hour, I felt the need. I had to roll a little bit of something deep blue your way, because it's something that, especially early on a few years ago on our show, we did a lot of interviews with people concerning the counter-piracy effort that's taking place right off of Somalia and Kenya. And you mentioned Nairobi, which has really been, from both the legal side and also from a logistics point of view, very important to that effort, not just a U.S. effort, NATO, EU, other nations who have come in to help and continue to help with that operation. And one of the recurring themes is it's not just a policing action or a security action about going after pirates, but when you pull the onion back, there's a significant economic aspect on what can drive certain people to go into doing that, or to at least turn a blind eye to it. What type of organizations do you have that, at least in East Africa, are helping on the economic side and the economic development, which is going to be essential to help take the sharp edge off of some of the security challenges that we have there?
Yeah, so that's really why, as I stated before, for each one of the countries, there is an ambassador that is a representative of our president of the United States, and they're in charge of that country. And of course, within that country team, they have good partnership, and they have USAID in theirs. And that is the piece that does that, and who I coordinate with that with. I may set the conditions and gain access to allow that to get in there, but I don't usually deal with that from a CJTF Horn of Africa. I understand that it's going on. I do understand that it is part of the solution, because it's all part of defense, development, and diplomacy. All three have to be going on together. So we try to coordinate those efforts. And it really gets tough in coordinating those efforts in Somalia with the federal government of Somalia, because, you know, the troop contributing countries can go out there and liberate towns and push al-Shabaab around. But if you don't have that development, economic, and you don't have that diplomacy all going in at the same time, you're not as effective. So I understand that environment. I work in that environment, and I try to coordinate the best I can. But I'm really focusing on the defense piece. But I do understand that the stability piece behind it, made up of diplomacy and development, is very important. Over.
Yes, sir. I'd like to thank you for taking some time with us today to discuss this stuff. But before we let you go, is there anything that you'd like to point to that we haven't discussed that you think the American people really ought to know about what's going on with your organization there in the Horn of Africa in Djibouti?
Yeah, you know, I've been in the Army for about, 31 years, I think. And I learned this lesson always over and over again. And it's a real simple lesson. It's really about people, and it's in my organization and the organizations here in East Africa, it's really about developing and building leaders. Because, you know, we can, all of this stuff, all this, you know, we can give them more equipment, we can give them more technology, you know, we can do all that. But if you give them that equipment and you give them that technology and you don't give them, if you don't build leaders over time, and see, the issue is you don't know if you built, it takes a long time to build leaders. So you have to have patience. But all my experiences in Kosovo, my experiences in Iraq, my experiences in Afghanistan, my experiences in Jordan, and here I am again in East Africa, it's really about finding the great leaders in each one of these countries and developing them and developing great leaders. Then all of the money that we put into equipment and the technology and all that other stuff is even more effective. But we spend a lot of time building leaders here and identifying. I spend a lot of time going to education locations where we're talking to different teammates and just planting those seeds on what it really means to be a leader. You know, are you going to do the right thing at 02 in the morning when no one's watching? Is it based on integrity and character? That uniform you put on, it's about something bigger than you, that you're representing the people, the good people of your country, and you're there to protect the good people of the country from evil things that can happen to them. It's a bigger calling. It's a huge calling to be a soldier or a serviceman as part of your country, and I thank them each and every day for what they do, just the same way I thank all of the servicemen that are serving here in CJTFO, a part of Operation Enduring Freedom, for deployed in East Africa. With the same mission, just limited policy, limited authorities, and limited resources. But if this is the way we're going to operate in the future, right, with these small teams that have high impacts, we really got to make sure, not only in our own military, that we clearly identify those great leaders. We're always developing those great leaders so they can have more capability. But as we build partnership and as we build capability here in East Africa, we got to make sure we're building leaders and assisting those teammates and identifying and clearly assisting them in building great leaders within East Africa. With that, all this other stuff that we do will be more effective. But if you don't have that, I don't think you'll be very effective. Over.
Spot on. And that's a real strong ending to a great time. Again, just to parallel what my co-host said, really appreciate you taking time with our listeners today to talk about you and your team there at JTF HOA. We wish you well, sir, and we'll be keeping an eye on you down the road.
All right. Thank you very much. Thanks for what you guys do is getting the word out and helping us communicate what we're trying to accomplish here in this great team here. And we have a great team of military and civilian leaders in CJTF HOA here in East Africa. Thank you very much.
Welcome, sir, and thank you to all our listeners. And our guest today, again, has been Major General Wayne W. Grigsby, Jr., Commanding General, CJTF HOA. Thank you very much, and have a great Navy, and we'll throw in a little bit of Army there today.
Tipperary, but my heart's right there.